If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and builds specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
So I know you've got a lot going on. But remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A 20-year-old woman was fatally shot in New York City while she pushed her infant daughter in a stroller. This latest shooting is again throwing a spotlight on the rise in murders in the Big Apple, which many suspect is going to experience a summer of increased violence. Poor city and state leaders are blaming the issue on guns rather than their own failure to enforce the laws and their undermining of the NYPD. Friends, it's time for Hold the Line. Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. It happened in the neighborhood that I grew up in here in New York City, the Upper East Side, a place not generally thought of as having much, if any, violent crime going on. It's one of the safest areas, safest neighborhoods in all of New York City, and yet there was an execution-style killing there last night. A young woman, 20 years old, shot in the back of the head. It is believed that her killer was an ex-boyfriend, the NYPD telling reporters today that he had a history of threats and violence against her. She was supposed to meet with the father of her child on the street, and he came up behind her, allegedly, and killed her on the street. This is the kind of crime that gets a lot of attention because of the heinousness of it, and it also is another fatal shooting on the streets of New York at a time when the numbers are far too high. Now, we have gone through before this situation where there was far too much violence in the streets of New York, as well as many other cities across the country: Houston, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland. They've all seen substantial rises, and smaller cities like St. Louis and Birmingham and Little Rock, rises in violent crime. And the way we deal with this successfully is to actually start enforcing the laws in a meaningful way against the criminal element, against those in our society who are breaking the law. But that's not the plan that Democrats want to go with. Instead, their focus is on getting rid of and stopping the guns. as if there's any real hope, as if there's any realistic chance that they're going to pass more laws, when you already have in places like New York very restrictive gun laws, but pass more laws elsewhere that stop people who are criminals from breaking those laws to use guns illegally in shootings like the tragic one that happened just last night in New York. Here is the mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, at the scene of that shooting of the 20-year-old mother.
This entire day, we have been addressing the problem of the overproliferation of guns on our street, how readily accessible they are, and how there is no fear in using these guns on innocent New Yorkers. When a mother's pushing a baby carriage down the block, or an individual, a woman is pushing a baby carriage down the block and is shot in point blank range, it shows just how this national problem is impacting families.
So he's focused on the guns instead of progressive prosecutors who will not bring the necessary cases with the severity that is commensurate with the offenses. Won't do that in New York City. Won't do that in so many places across the country. And instead focuses on guns because this is more politically acceptable to him. As if New York, which has what they call a river of steel, or the steel pipeline that comes from a number of other states that have more accessible firearms laws. People illegally sell those firearms. It's called a straw purchase, a violation of federal law. People illegally sell those guns to individuals, and then they take them across state lines and they use them in heinous crimes. This is something that I had not seen before in New York, but it might be something that becomes more common. In New York City, a gunman on a scooter in broad daylight, on a little scooter there, tried a drive-by scooter shooting. Actually tried to commit a murder via scooter shooting. You see it here. Nobody was hurt in this shooting, fortunately. But this just goes to show you that this is broad daylight, caught on camera. The criminal element does not have fear of police action. They think they're going to get away with this stuff. And unfortunately, in so many cases, they are. And this is because Democrat leadership in places like New York lack the political will to do what is necessary, which is lock up criminals and back the police. We see what the numbers tell us. I mean, here's a graph showing murders starting in 2011 in New York City to 2021. You see, it was at 515, and then it dropped way down. It actually got below 300. And then, look at that, in 2020, the BLM movement, all of a sudden the NYPD gets a $1 billion budget cut. There are all these changes being made, like the plainclothes police division, one of the most useful, most effective anti-crime units of the NYPD, the largest police department in America, is taken off the streets, reassigned to other units. They effectively disband that unit. And we see the predictable results. None of this is surprising. I mean, none of this is, oh, wow, how did we get here? When you defund and undermine your cops, and when you have progressive lunatics running your prosecutor's offices, which New York and many other cities in America do right now, the criminals run free, and they prey on people, and they hurt people, and they kill people, and the numbers get worse. And the cops know this, and they know they don't have the political backing. They know that every time the mayor's office here in New York puts out some statement, it's always about how they have to be ready. The new police units are being trained in de-escalation, and they're going to make sure that they're not, you know, scaring the community. Cops are only scary to criminals, to the bad guys in New York, all right? We actually like our cops here, but the left, the Democrats, especially rich Democrats who live in very safe areas, who feel like this won't really affect them, they don't care. So a lot of cops are leaving. The NYPD's had an exodus. Police are on pace to quit and retire once again in record numbers. They tried a recent recruiting drive, and they wanted 1,000, I think they got about 600. So just a little over half of the numbers that they wanted. That's a substantial shortfall that they're gonna have to figure out what to do about. And it's not even just the NYPD in New York City that has this problem of horrible Democrat leadership results in the kinds of challenges that we're seeing here in the city. I mean, the decrease in quality of life, the increase in crime. Governor Kathy Hochul, who is among the dumbest people in American political life today, when she was asked, because she wants to pass these laws now to make it harder for people to bring guns into legally owned firearms into businesses. So the business is going to have to opt into allowing you to carry while you're in that business. This just makes it more annoying because, you know, a criminal who's going in to rob a liquor store or a bank is going to say, whoa, hold on a second. This business does not allow lawful firearm carry, so I'm not going to go in there and rob it. Obviously, that's not going to happen. So when Kathy Hochul is asked if she has any data to back up her latest gun restriction ideas, here's what she says.
Do you have the numbers to show that it's the concealed carry permit holders that are committing crimes? Because the lawful gun owner will say that you're attacking the wrong person. It's really people that are getting these guns illegally that are causing the violence, not the people going and getting the permit legally. And that's the basis for the whole Supreme Court argument. Do you have the numbers?
I don't need to have numbers. I don't have to have a data point to point to say that this is going to matter. All I know is I have a responsibility to the people of this state to have sensible gun safety laws.
I don't need the numbers. I'm just going to do what I want. She's a moron, so it's not going to help. All right, the Supreme Court dealt a blow to the Biden administration today, limiting the regulatory authority of the Environmental Protection Agency. Coming up, we'll talk to the founder and executive director of Power of the Future, Daniel Turner, to explain what the new rules mean for American energy production. First, I want to talk to you about protecting your online data. A lot of companies promise your privacy is guaranteed, but that's not true. That's why you need a new privacy and cybersecurity application tool called Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. Secure is using proprietary encryption and offering secure instant messaging and email. With Secure, all of your communications based on servers and data centers hosted in Switzerland without using any of the big tech platforms. Privacy is a big issue now. Without real security, people can read your emails, messages, even your bank information. Secure will never mine your data and never ask for your phone number. You can send emails to your doctor, banker, lawyer, or anyone else with total confidence you're not being spied on by your internet provider or big tech. Secure is your solution to stop the constant theft of your digital identity. It costs only $5 for the messenger, only $10 for the messenger and email combination package. Go to secure.com and take back your privacy today. That's S-E-K-U-R.com. And use promo code BUCK for 25% off. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line. Another major ruling coming out of the Supreme Court today in a setback for the Biden administration's efforts to combat climate change, they say. Court said in a 6-3 ruling, the Environmental Protection Agency lacks broad authority to shift the nation's energy production away from coal-burning power plants toward cleaner sources, including solar and wind power. Joining me now to discuss one of the most important environmental decisions in a long time, founder and executive director of Power of the Future, Daniel Turner. Daniel, what's up, man?
Thanks for having me on, Buck. Good to be with you.
So just tell us what went down today with us. What was that issue in this particular Supreme Court case when it comes to the EPA and its ability to make administrative law, essentially?
Yeah, this is 10 years in the making, right? This really started with the Obama EPA taking legislation like the Clean Air Act and giving it really, really wide interpretation, and administrators determining, well, if the Clean Air Act says this, therefore we're allowed to regulate whole industries, right? And we were shutting down coal plants because it was under the Clean Air Act. And finally, the governor of West Virginia, and I'm in the great state of West Virginia right now doing this, so I'm honored. Finally, the attorney general of West Virginia pushed back and said, no. Like, if Congress wants to change the mandate of the Clean Air Act or any legislation, Congress has to write legislation on it. Bureaucrats cannot arbitrarily interpret them as they want. That is not within their power. That's all the courts did today, was saying, no, Congress, you need to write a law if you want that result. And the Democrat members of Congress are apoplectic, calling this, you know, irresponsible and radical. They're just saying, Congress, do your job.
And what kind of cost? I mean, do we have any sense as to what this regulation would have meant in terms of making energy more expensive, making it harder for the power companies, the power producers to do what they do for the people that need their product?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer because I look at this included in that as well as the human cost. Like I said, this is 10 years in the making. And you have to remember when Obama ran for president, he said, I'm not going to make coal illegal. I'm just going to say that if you own a coal plant when I'm president, you're going to go bankrupt. We have shut down since then about 200 coal plants nationwide. Look at the cost of energy right now, right? Look at the looming blackouts that are coming. This is all the instability of the electric grid. But look at what we've done to coal communities around the country, where we've taken industries that used to employ thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, and we've taken away their job. None of these green jobs ever materialized, right? We've put them in underwater mortgages. We've shuttered their schools because there's no funding. And now what do old coal communities have? They have opioid problems, suicide problems. The fentanyl problem is worse in old coal towns, right? So we've destroyed the lives of tens of thousands of Americans in the name of climate change. And no one's cried about them, right? Power of the Future has. I have. You have. But the Obama administration, the Biden administration, just yesterday, Gina McCarthy, one of the climate czars, was applauding the number of fossil fuel unemployment that has happened under her watch. They're happy that they're destroying the lives of Americans. So that's the biggest toll that it's taken.
Chief Justice John Roberts was quoted in the majority opinion as saying, or writing, capping carbon dioxide emissions at a level that will force a nationwide transition away from the use of coal to generate electricity may be a sensible solution to the crisis of the day, but it is not plausible that Congress gave the EPA the authority to adopt on its own such a regulatory scheme. A decision of such magnitude and consequence rests with Congress itself, or an agency acting pursuant to a clear delegation from that representative body. I got to say, anything that reins in the administrative state these days, I view as a good thing, Daniel. I wanted your take on this. I mean, I think what we saw during COVID, never mind when you think about what's going on in the energy industry, was that three-letter federal agencies that decide that they have a lot of power to make law unto themselves, essentially, are a huge threat to liberty, to commerce, to the everyday lives of the American people.
You raise a great point, because COVID is the next step of the climate movement, as they've wanted the Biden administration to declare climate change a national emergency. And when you declare something a national emergency or a health emergency, you can shut down people's churches, right? You can force them to close their business. You can force people to be locked in their homes. All for the greater good. And where does their authority come from? It comes from this huge bureaucratic, unelected regulatory state. So you're absolutely right. The left loves the bureaucracy and they love regulation because it's nebulous, it's vague, it's all-encompassing. The left does not like the law because the law is specific. And if you want to work in the D.C. swamp and you want to advance an agenda, you need thousands of regulations. You need a big nebulous world. And so this is a huge win for victory. It's a win for the energy industry. It's a huge win for freedoms in America, quite frankly, that we're taking power back from the government.
I also want to see if you give us an update, Daniel, on the state of the Biden administration's entreaties, requests, begging, whatever you want to call it, to foreign governments to produce, like Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, to produce more oil instead of really encouraging it here at home. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, you know, last week, Buck, the major oil CEOs were summoned to D.C., but President Biden was very proud that he refused to meet with them. He sent Jennifer Granholm, which is, you know, a know-nothing staffer, really, to deal with them. So he's made these tremendous outreaches to the Saudis, to Venezuela, to Iran. He wants the whole world to produce more oil, but he won't make the slightest overture to America because it blows up his green agenda. And it just fascinates me to see this guy really hat in hand going around the world asking for an increase in oil production, knowing we need to produce more oil, but refusing to look here domestically. He needs the radical green movement on his side, and he's not going to anger them before the midterms. But we're suffering as a result.
Are we seeing any movement from the Biden administration to get some of the regulation out of the way so that there can be more exploration and refining and producing of gasoline for the consumer market? Are they taking even basic steps in that direction, or are they holding out even though the election's looming?
No, they're going to hold out as long as possible. Like, I talk to people in this space all the time. An oil driller told me just the other day that he's one of these quote unquote 9,000 leases we hear about. But he said, I can't get my right of way permitting, right? The permission to actually drill a well. That's the next step after your lease. And it's being held up by the Department of Interior. And he said it's been months and months that we're just waiting for them to give the green light. So again, this is the power of the regulatory state, where some guy in the Permian Basin, he needs Deb Haaland's okay, right? Where are the governors to say, no, we don't need some bureaucrat 3,000 miles away in D.C. to tell us that we can develop our land. So they're slow walking the entire process, and it's deliberate, right? They want this green revolution. They want wind and solar, even though they don't work, even though they're expensive, even though they're made in Chinese slave camps. They want wind and solar, and if the American people have to die in the process, that's just a necessary casualty in this great transformation.
Daniel, appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
In response to the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, Democrats, including Joe Biden, are threatening to eliminate the Senate filibuster in order to enshrine abortion rights in U.S. federal law. We'll have more on that with senior writer at The Federalist, David Harsanyi, after the break. First, let's talk about protecting your most valuable asset, your home. I don't know if you saw this, but there's a recent story about an Arizona real estate agent that found the home she lived in was listed for sale. Problem was, she wasn't selling her home. She was the victim of home title fraud, a devastating crime happening all over the country. According to the experts at Home Title Lock, the crime is incredibly profitable and hard to detect. An identity thief simply creates a fake title transfer for your home and refiles as the new owner. Then he can take out loans on your home or sell it. Typical identity theft services don't cover you, and neither does homeowners insurance. Home Title Lock does. Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's title. The instant they detect anyone tampering with your home's title, they help shut it down and help get your home back in your name. Here's what you should do. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and read the testimonials from FBI agents and government officials. Then register your address to see if you're already a victim and don't even know it. When you protect your home, tell them Buck sent you to get 30 free days of protection. HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. David Harsanyi stops by in a moment. Stay with us.
I believe we have to codify Roe v. Wade in the law, and the way to do that is to make sure the Congress votes to do that. And if the filibuster gets in the way, it's like voting rights, it should be, we provide an exception for this, require an exception to the filibuster for this action.
It only took President Biden about a week to call on Congress to codify the right to an abortion into federal law, even if it requires getting rid of the filibuster in the Senate. Reuters is now reporting that Biden officials are concerned that more radical moves would be politically polarizing ahead of November's midterm elections, undermining public trust in institutions like the Supreme Court. So could we see this end to the filibuster, a one-off end maybe, or are the potential political consequences too much for Democrats to bear? Joining me now to discuss, senior editor at The Federalist, David Harsanyi. David, appreciate you being with us.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
So I have to say, I wish they would stop with the "this issue is so important that we'll break the filibuster," because I remember when a year ago it was H.R. 1 is so important that we will have to break the filibuster. Of course, they didn't. But, I mean, how do we even take them seriously on this stuff after a while? It's like, either get rid of the filibuster or don't, but stop pretending.
Well, don't get rid of it.
I don't like it, but I'm just saying.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I get you. I get you. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're going to do it. I just think this is for show, because a lot of people are mad about Roe v. Wade on the left. So he wants to pretend that he's doing something. I don't think it's going to happen. But I do think it's really destructive, mostly because you're normalizing the idea that if you don't get what you want, you could just simply, destroy a norm or destroy an institution like the Supreme Court if you don't like it. I mean, Biden is literally in Madrid criticizing and attacking an institution in the United States. I mean, I think that's unprecedented. I'm not 100% sure, but it was pretty bad. Also, the funny thing about this, maybe not so funny, is that he wants to make an exception for the filibuster only for stuff he wants, so that only Democrats can use it, for bills they want to pass, but Republicans, they can't use it, right? It just doesn't work that way. Harry Reid tried this with the judicial filibuster, and it was destroyed. And if Democrats do it now, it will be destroyed for legislation, and they'll pay a heavy price in the long run for it.
Plus, it wasn't that long ago that Biden himself was saying ending the filibuster was a dangerous thing to do. In fact, it was in 2019 when he said this.
Should they end the legislative filibuster if that's what's needed to pass gun reform?
I think we have to make that call on the fly. Ending the filibuster is a very dangerous thing to do because it's been used by progressives the whole our whole time to make sure that we did not get rolled over.
So yeah, he says back in 2019 there, David, that ending the filibuster is a bad idea. I mean, does anyone even pay attention? Like Joe Biden arguing with Joe Biden from 5 minutes ago, 5 years ago, it just doesn't matter to any of the people that are supporting him, right? He can say whatever, no principles, just go for it.
Yeah, I mean, he called the filibuster a pillar of democracy in, you know, 2005 or whenever it was. But this is a man who will drop 50-year-old, you know, positions, you know, because someone at Twitter is mocking him like that, like he did with the Hyde Amendment. So he has zero principles, and he's always been this way. He's never had any principles. People confuse his spinelessness and in trying to always be loved by the center of the Democratic Party for moderation, and that's not what it is at all. So I don't think people care about that. They don't pay attention. Most on the left, they just don't care anyway. They have two sets of rules we're supposed to play by. Democrats used the filibuster on Donald Trump, I think, in 2019 and 2020, like 300 and something times, 28 times, I think. So they're incredibly shameless hypocrites about this. And I'm a huge fan of the filibuster. I think it's one of the only things saving federalism in any kind of way. If we didn't have it, I think it would lead to such a destabilization of government. So I'm a big fan of it. And Democrats in the Senate used to be big fans of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, back in 2005, even Chuck Schumer, speaking of 2005, you mentioned that year, said if Republicans can't get their way in the courts, we will not let them change the rules. Watch this one.
Because they can't get their way on every judge to change the rules in midstream, to wash away 200 years of history. They want to make this country into a banana republic where if you don't get your way, you change the rules. Are we going to let them?
No! I mean, first of all, Chuck Schumer is such a shameless, bloviating clown, but, you know, been in the Senate a very long time, gets away with it somehow. I just think it's interesting, the same people that are always telling us about how there's a need to protect the institutions of our democracy, until all of a sudden it's not giving them what they want, and then it's like, let's pack the court, let's get rid of the filibuster, anything goes.
Literally, the court gave back an issue to the voters, and they keep calling it anti-democracy. I've not had one of these people explain to me how it's anti-democracy. I mean, you know, and they say the same thing about the, you know, about the EPA decision that came down, you know, that democracy over. Why? Because you have to go to voters and Congress to ask them to do something? I don't even understand, because really all it means to them, democracy, is getting what they want. And that is a banana republic, you know, if we allow that to happen.
Here's AOC, by the way, who I actually think, because of her social media and media presence and ability to drive the conversation in many ways, as crazy as this is, among the more powerful Democrats, certainly when it comes to the national conversation from the left. Here she is straight up saying, yeah, let's pack the court. Let's end the filibuster. Go for it.
I believe that the president should come out in favor, forcefully in favor of expanding the Supreme Court. I believe that the president should forcefully come out in favor of abolishing the Senate filibuster. Those two actions dramatically increase political pressure and makes it much harder to resist.
I love this. It's like they don't even remember. You mentioned the Harry Reid situation. They don't remember what happened with that, changing the rules just because they wanted to at that one point in time, right? They didn't like the long-term
right.
consequences of that. It's like we're reasoning with spoiled children here. They're just like, oh, well, just this one time for the thing we really want. And of course, there's a lot of different things that they just really want that one time, as if that's not going to come back to bite them. I mean, it's kind of amazing.
Well, well, of course. But, you know, I think that there's a difference between her and some of the other people. And I'm not, you know, if I take her seriously, you know, which I'm trying to do. One is that I think that the Harry Reids of the world and the Chuck Schumers of the world know better and are just cynical political operators who don't care what they destroy to get what they want. I think she is a, I don't know what to call her, a Marxist. Okay, I think she wants to incrementally go towards a centralized federal control that overrides the will of states, that essentially destroys the United States government in its present form. So if I take her seriously. So that's the difference between the two. And she is, I think you're right, a much more powerful voice than people give her credit for, because a lot of younger people and people who are really plugged in online, et cetera, I think they are far, you know, they listen to her. They listen to her normalizing these her insane ideas. And it is also dangerous. It's dangerous that she's treated seriously.
Yeah, no. And she's also truly, deeply, and obviously ignorant on so much and in so many ways. None of her supporters seem to care. You know, she just blabbers on online, and they think she's amazing, and yes, queen, and all this stuff you see. Stunning stuff. Anyway, well, we're going to try to save the country, David, while we can. Thanks for being with us, my friend.
Anytime. Thank you.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis taking another step to protecting parental rights in his state by throwing his support behind conservative school board candidates. We have more on that with Sarasota County School Board member Bridget Ziegler. Stay with us.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis took the next step in protecting parents' rights in education across his state by jumping into local school board races with crucial endorsements, including last week, "We need strong local school board members who are committed to advancing our agenda to put students first and protect parents' rights. I'm proud to endorse 10 local school board candidates who will set our children up for success." Sarasota County School Board member Bridget Ziegler was one of the 10 candidates endorsed by DeSantis, and she joins me now. Bridget, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So the governor launched the DeSantis Education Agenda, which is a student-first, parent-centered initiative focused on setting Florida's children up for success, ensuring parental rights in education, and combating the woke agenda from infiltrating public schools. How do the school boards play into this, and what are you looking to do?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Governor DeSantis. It's remarkable that a governor chimed in local school board races, and a lot of people talk about how unprecedented it is, but so many things and the leadership that Ron DeSantis has done is unprecedented, and he realizes how important the decisions that are made at the local level. I think we all saw that during COVID. And all the items that you just highlighted, part of his education agenda, while great being led by the governor, and then we have a Republican-led state legislature, but it comes down to local elected officials at the school board level to hold that line. And they do play a critical role. I'm proud to be and humbled to be a part of the 10 that he endorsed, and proud to say that I am looking forward to holding that line as I have since I first got on the board.
So you're already on the board. What are the kind of changes that you're seeking to do? I mean, I would assume there are other new school board members who are also looking. I mean, given the incredible focus, honestly, at the national level on some of the school board meetings in Virginia and obviously other states, including Florida, parents all over the country really focused in on this. So what are some of the things that you're trying to accomplish at your Florida school board in Sarasota?
Well, first and foremost, so just to set the stage, we have a board of five. While it's nonpartisan, you can go based on the policy philosophy, and we have a majority liberal board, as you'll find across the country. And so first and foremost, it's understanding that as an elected official, you work for the people. That is something that has been lacking. I think you mentioned it when you talk about people coming to school board meetings and being frustrated because they've been met with disdain. With parents whom they serve being bothered by the concerns that they have. So I think think it's critical. We have three seats up in Sarasota County. We have the opportunity to flip the board to a conservative majority that are focused on serving the people, protecting parental rights, and ensuring that we're having academic focus, not political agendas. That is going to be a huge focus and a huge opportunity. Now, there's going to be other boards across the state and country where they may not have a majority, but you need a strong, vocal, common sense conservative that is there to serve the mission of the school district, understand taxpayers pay into this system, make sure that they understand that they are there to serve the people with the focus of academic excellence. And so they're, when you look at his agenda, when you look at what I hope to see in Sarasota County, a lot of that is going to, it's the mindset of the board, the public servants, if you will, because right now they are not public servants, they're self-serving themselves.
And was there one incident that got you first, essentially, did something happen either with your own children in the school system or near where you live that got you interested in doing this in the first place? And what are the kind of things that you've heard of? I mean, usually people decide they want to join the school board because they want to address something. You've told us some of the things you want to do on the positive side, but is there wokeness in CRT in Sarasota? I feel like people wouldn't think that's happening, but there are very red states that have some very left-wing school board stuff going on.
So I got on the board early on with an 8-month-old. I was a new mom. And as many people understand, as soon as you become a parent, the entire world and the view that you look at the world changes. Government takes a long time to work. I dealt with a lot of nonprofits and focused on children's issues, but there was a vacancy and I ran and I stepped off that ledge, and I'm glad I did because it surprised me and it was a calling. Through that time, I was surprised to see the antics, and this is back in 2014, that the behavior of the board and that disdain that has been going on, that's not a new thing. But to go to current events, over some time, there's more of the bureaucracy and those typical challenges that I saw, but over some time in the last 4 to 6 years, particularly aggressively in the last three, with the social agendas, the CRT broadly termed, but and also the gender ideology, it was a very big concern of mine. I launched a major focus in 2018 around parental rights because while it was around gender diverse guidelines, and it's not anti anything, I'm just very focused on parental rights and ensuring parents have a voice and a seat at the table. In those provisions, it said it's up to a student and a student alone to determine which gender and facilities that a student would use, and precluded staff from notifying parents. And it said in elementary cases, it's a case by case basis. And to me, just the emphasis of this is this government body indicating they know better than parents. And as a parent, that was wrong. And where does that end? And we're seeing that. And that was back in 2018. So we've just seen it erode further. I'm so grateful that the public has, it's unfortunate that it took this much, but I'm grateful that people see it. And we have a moment we need to course correct for our children and for their future and for the future of this country. And again, I go back to Ron DeSantis, our governor. I am so grateful because he's been bold. He has highlighted all the issues that so many people weren't willing to take on. And he's done it with gusto and fact-based. And so I am privileged and honored to live in Florida and to have his endorsement. But I implore anyone who's listening, watching, to take an active role in knowing when your school board elections are. In Florida, they're August 23rd. Most people think elections and they think November in the state of Florida because it's nonpartisan. August 23rd, I can't say it enough, to make sure that people show up because local government is truly where things happen, and education is key when you think about local, the local economy, the future of your community, and the future of this country. So I will keep fighting. We need strong backbones, conservatives that are willing to understand as a public servant, you serve the people. And I'm looking forward to the outcome on August 23rd because I think there's a lot of energy and a lot of support and need to change this, right the ship, if you will.
I know some other states are looking at the very detailed DeSantis education agenda and implementing parts of it, perhaps. They'll take it on wholesale over time. We have that education agenda by bullet point. Keep schools open and reject lockdowns. Educate, don't indoctrinate. Ensure parental rights in education and keep woke gender ideology out of schools. Support robust civics education. Expand workforce development, technical education. Reject the use of CRT. Increase teacher pay. Continue support for school security, mental health initiatives. Protect the rights of parents. Guarantee the right of parents in curriculum transparency. I mean, those all seem like really good things to me, Bridget. Is your school board on board?
How could, again, so common sense, how could anyone deny these? And again, Ron DeSantis is a remarkable leader, and that's why so many people are flocking to Florida. Again, makes so much common sense, but ironically and surprisingly, we have many school board members across the state who are trying to reject it, but this is the key part. They're rejecting it because it is from a partisan standpoint, because they perhaps are Democrats and liberal Democrats and progressives, doesn't line up with their agenda. Everything that the governor has listed out is focused on academic outcomes for our students to achieve, and that is the purpose of education. So it is, again, it's a breath of fresh air that he's taking this fight all the way down and making everyone aware at the impact that local school board elections have. His agenda is, again, common sense and resonating with not just Republicans, but NPAs and former Democrats. I say that because we're seeing numbers of people leave the Democrat Party because of their progressive extreme agenda that does not resonate with the real life issues that people are worried about, particularly their children as they raise and want them to be productive, successful members of society.
Bridget, good luck to you in this mission. Thank you so much for being with us. Good to see you.
Thank you so much.
Guess who's probably the most excited about the news that President Biden doesn't want to count drunk driving as a felony? Nancy Pelosi. That story coming up in Quick Hits. DHS Secretary Mayorkas finally admits that he understands why Border Patrol agent morale is down. And the White House COVID response coordinator says that a COVID shot once a year is the goal. Could have seen that one coming. In fact, I think we did. But it's probably going to be more than once. It's going to be every year. Time for Quick Hits. Let's get to it. One of the most annoying things that you'll see about the Democrats and the leftist mentality is their usage of children for political messaging that has nothing to do with kids. Right? They'll put children forward about gun control and act like, oh, but it's because, you know, we're all so scared of the gun violence that's going to be visited upon small children. I've seen kids at protests who are toddlers holding up these signs. Why are they making their children do this stuff? Well, a young child in Arkansas was, by their parents' direction, leading a My Body, My Choice protest. They love to politicize children. It's also why they like to indoctrinate them in the schools as young as they possibly can, to brainwash people, to make them believe in a leftist orthodoxy, and most importantly, to make them incapable as they grow older of thinking for themselves, of thinking through issues as an individual instead of just going along with the herd. President Biden said something pretty weird today. He's pandering. It's what he's always doing, you know. Biden is now the big criminal justice reformer. Remember, Biden was the guy in the 90s who signed the big tough on crime federal bill, which now he's apologizing for. It's actually a pretty good bill, but now he's apologizing for it because, you know, social justice means that criminals should get away with things, apparently. Here's Biden saying he doesn't want to count drunk driving as a felony. Watch.
You only arrest for the purpose of dealing with a felony that's committed, and I don't count drunk driving as a felony.
And that's interesting. Is Joe Biden, you have to wonder, is it that he's so old that he just isn't really with it sometimes? Or is it more that he's just always been really dumb? It's tough to tell. Is it more cognitive impairment from age, or Joe Biden is actually just kind of a low IQ guy? I'm persuadable either way on this one. So today, a border ruling came down that means that Remain in Mexico is effectively over, which the Biden administration wants to do because they want the continued illegal immigration to flood into the country. They like this, they don't want it to stop, and they're willing to act in bad faith and effectively ignore their obligation under federal law to secure the border to get there. They simply don't care. It's a border that's the worst it's ever been from the perspective of lawlessness and law and order. And here is Mayorkas admitting, yeah, you know, Border Patrol morale is down, and he gets why. Watch.
If you could, just you know, talk a little about the challenges we have, how the department is really going about trying to curtail this. What's the most effective and efficient way? And what is our path forward?
Yeah. So I will tell you the frustration of the individuals, you know, with the badges on the ground and the holstered firearms is earned.
Yeah.
We need to be very clear about that. And our Border Patrol agents, you know, their morale is down, and I understand why.
Yeah, because you're a tool of the left, and you won't actually allow for the border to be secured and for the laws to be faithfully enforced. Pretty straightforward. White House COVID-19 Response Coordinator Dr. Ashish Jha says, you know, once a year COVID shot, that's what we're going for forever. Watch.
So is the COVID shot going to end up being like the flu shot, or at some point will we not have to get it?
Good question. Right now, we do not have a vaccine that's going to give you lifelong protection. Our vaccines so far have been giving about sort of 6 to 12 months of protection. My hope is, as we continue to make improvements, that we will get to a point where you get to an annual COVID shot. That's not quite where we are, but we are making progress. And I think that is the goal, is let's get it to once a year.
Yeah.
Americans are used to it. Most Americans will get it. That'll be a great way to manage the virus.
Absolutely.
Is it going to be mandatory, though? Notice how they've had to admit the shot nowhere near as good as they said. Not even close. They lied to you, but they don't care. That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is next. Shields high.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall in tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes. The families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's t2t.org.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. You may be able to reduce your tax liability while investing in a sector that has historically delivered sound returns. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com today.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too.
With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extrahelp.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.